Welcome to EdTech Talk number 26, being webcast live on November 20th, 2005. This is Jeff Lebo in Bow, New Hampshire, joined by two co-hosts this time around, Dave in Prince Edward Island.
Lovely to be here as always, Jeffrey.
And Jeff Flynn, Mr. Brainstorm Guy, is joining us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Good morning, guys.
This is a very special edition of EdTech Talk because it is part of the Webheads in Action Online Convergence, which has been taking place for almost the past 72 hours. And it has been an extraordinary gathering and display of people experimenting with educational technology and sharing what they've learned and what ideas have been generated. For all of our new listeners, welcome, and to our old listeners as well. First, a brief overview of what this is. This is the 26th time that we've done a live interactive webcast called EdTech Talk, where we cover the latest news on EdTech and share ideas, and we often have guests to come on and share their ideas and thoughts. We usually either interview the guest or go over news and resources for the first part of the show, and then for the second part of the show, people can Skype in to make comments or ask questions. You can also tune in and participate by calling the teleconference. The phone number and access code is on the front page of worldbridges.com. From tuning in to most of the presentations this past weekend, one of the things that has really struck me is that there's so much going on in EdTech. There are so many different programs and resources and ideas and innovations that it's impossible for one person to really keep up with all of it. Part of what we try to do here is help funnel some of the information and help share what has been going on within the last week or in general in the world of EdTech. The last few weeks, we've been very fortunate to have some great guests, Barbara Ganley, David Warlick, Stephen Downs, Will Richardson, Harold
Jarkin, Terry Friedman.
James Farmer, Jay Cross. It's been really quite extraordinary and almost feels like we've been in the center of the EdTech universe, and there's been a lot to process, but we haven't had much of an opportunity to go over EdTech news. So today we're going to go back to some of that.
We're coming back to doing some news and stuff, but I think also we've gotten a lot of comments in the last week that the conversation, for instance, between Jay Cross and George Siemens was really interesting, but it's up there in the rarefied air, and a lot of people are having a hard time getting their minds around what they're saying. So hopefully over the next couple of weeks, our plan is to sort of bring it down a bit and go back to the places where we started. So go back to basics, the basics of EdTech. We're going to do sort of a regular show today, talk about some of the news, and next week we're going to do an intro show. We're going to go right back to the basics, right back to the open source toolkit, which we're going to talk about a little later, and sort of give people a sense of what all the things that we're talking about are, do some definitions, and hopefully have a lot of people come in and talk to us about their questions and the things that they want to know about, so that next week we're going to have a massive, massive Q&A and hopefully get everybody started from the same place. As we move on with the show, we'll have at least one show that we can reference people back to when they say, what are you guys talking about? Well, EdTech 27, that is next Sunday, will be that reference point. It'll be that level one that people can look to.
And once again, I just want to mention, if anyone is listening without being in the World Bridges chat room, please go to worldbridges.com or edtechtalk.com and click chat room to enter there. And please feel free to post any comments or questions about anything we're saying, and we'll address them as we go and hopefully get some of you participating in the second part of the show. So, Dave, what's new?
Oh, there's all kinds of things new this week. I think the most relevant news for a lot of people is that the security release of Moodle has just come out, 1.5.3. I know Jeff Flynn's going to be interested to hear this. The mass email to all those people interested was sent out yesterday from Martin Dougiamas, of the founder, lead developer of Moodle. And I'm going to break my rule here and actually read a little bit of it over the line, because I don't know that I could restated as well as he said it. You may have noticed several highly publicized security problems that were advertised around the internet during the past week. There is now a new version of Moodle that addresses all these problems, 1.5.3. The new version doesn't actually solve the problem. are all the problems. What it does is it adds security warnings to let you know if you've put on the settings that allow the problem to happen, because the settings, or at least certain combinations of those settings, are really useful, but there's one combination that can get you into trouble, and they've added a warning system to tell you that you've gotten there, because they can't shut down the whole combination altogether without rewiring the whole thing. And I think they'll probably have that solved for the February release, which is 1.6, which I believe is going to be the blogging release. And then later on for Moodle 2.0, it'll definitely be fixed.
What was the actual security problem?
It was an SQL injection bug.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Actually, that I think I know what that means.
Oh, cool.
Well, or at least I can pretend I know. Because occasionally a bug is found in a PHP program, and it allows people to basically break into your thing and run processes on your server that you do not intend to run. It's happened a couple of times on the World Bridges server, and it's a nightmare because it just gobbles up server resources. It can send out porn bots and all sorts of nasty things. If they can find a way in, then you're really very vulnerable to a lot of bad things. So I'm glad they fixed that. Any news on that blog module? Any beta testing or word on the street?
It's the same thing. James Farmer and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. Legend has it, it's coming along nicely. I haven't tried to install the beta yet. And I'm assuming it's there, and I haven't found it yet. So I'm not sure. I know that it's coming out in February. I know it's going to be there in the 1.6 release.
And but if people have their 1.5.2 Moodle up, how difficult is it to upgrade?
It's not too bad. All you need to do... It's not even an upgrade. Moodle's funny that way. What you end up doing is reinstalling Moodle, really. Like, you end up setting it up, you save 3 files, and then you reinstall, which is actually quicker than a normal upgrade, because all you end up doing is taking 1.5.3, opening it up in the part of the server where you have Moodle, and then you copy your config.php file back in from your old saved version, and you... put in whatever custom languages and custom themes that you have in, and you restart it with your moodle.com/admin, and then it automatically does the update. It's pretty simple stuff. Pretty simple stuff if you put it in there the first time.
Right.
But I do encourage everybody, particularly if you're on your own servers, and even if you aren't, go do the upgrade or get someone to do it, because this is the kind of thing that probably won't be a problem, but if it is,
it's going to be some. I suspect you're going to be getting a lot of nasty mail from tech admins at schools from around the world. All my teachers are saying I have to upgrade my Moodle, man. I also see on the show notes some tools, and these are things that have been mentioned before on a number of our shows. EduBlogs and Learner Blogs. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I just thought I'd bring back to that, because I know we've talked a lot about them on the brainstorm. I don't think we've ever talked about it on EdTech Talk.
And maybe before we proceed, we should clarify what the difference is between EdTech Talk and EdTech Brainstorm.
Okay. The EdTech Talk is a sort of a more organized and regimented show, quote-unquote, at least comparatively to the brainstorm. For EdTech Talk, we actually prepare show notes, or we have guests where we've done some research on the work that they've done, and while we don't ever tell our guests the questions we're going to ask them, we like to surprise them and keep things lively, we still do a fair amount of preparation in terms of content, and Jeff and I sort of organize to keep the show running fairly smoothly so that people don't fall asleep, hopefully. On the brainstorm, and usually on EdTech Talk, it's me and Jeff and maybe one other person, or we interview people who we come in and specially sort of set aside an hour with, like we did with Barbara Ganley, or like we did with Jay Cross and George Siemens, or any of those interviews. The brainstorm's a completely different beast. On Thursday night, or at least Saturday night this week, we changed the time, we bring in everybody who wants to come. And sometimes we have 4 people, and sometimes we have 15. And whatever people want to talk about is what we do, and we try to let the conversation evolve as naturally as possible, and we just sort of let the technology loose and see what happens. And we've had some fantastic shows that way. And one of the great things that came out of one of those brainstorms...
I'm sorry, before you continue, I just want to elaborate a little bit on brainstorm show times. It's normally held at 2 a.m. GMT Friday, which is Thursday night in North America and South America, and Friday morning in Asia. And so a lot of people in Asia and Australia have not been able to participate because they're at work during the brainstorm, and they're probably asleep now for the EdTech talk shows. We're hoping to get a second brainstorm session going, or an alternative one, where people who aren't able to tune into the other one can tune in. So we're experimenting with this new time slot this coming week, and if we can get some people to actually do the webcasting part of it in Asia or Australia or that hemisphere, we may get two brainstorms a week going.
Right. Cool. And the great thing about the brainstorm is that we get people from all over. We get teachers, we get techies, we get all kinds of things. One of the things that happened is Kathy Malls-Bendon is a technical supervisor from school district in New Hampshire. And she was saying, man, I want to get blogs up for my students, but Blogger, la 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 la. And James Farmer happened to be in the conversation. He goes, hey, I could set up a WordPress. I could set up a multi-user WordPress. I think I'll do that right now. There's a sale at Yahoo on domain names. So he left the chat, went out, bought the domain name, set up a multi-user WordPress, and pretty much by the end of the show had a multi-user WordPress called learnerblogs.org set up for any student in a classroom to go in and set up their own blog. So now that matches with eduBlogs.org, which is something that he had set up before, which is for teachers. So if you're a teacher and you want a blog for educational purposes, you can go to eduBlogs.org and set up a free blog there. It's actually super simple to set one up, too. It's just putting in a username and hitting go, and then getting accustomed to WordPress, which takes maybe about a half an hour or an hour for the average user to play around and figure out to get comfortable with. And if you are interested in how that process works, I suggest that you go read Barbara Sawhill's blog, because she blogged her way through her setup, which is very entertaining. And if you want to have your students set up blogs, you can go to learnerblogs.org, and you can have unlimited number of students set up their blogs and sort of connect them together. And Learnerblogs happened on our brainstorm, which is really cool.
It is, and the brainstorms really... We didn't know what to expect, but there's been a lot of synergy. And in fact, we should bring Jeff Flynn into this conversation. The very first brainstorm number one, Jeff Flynn Skyped in just to kind of test his Skype connection. And what happened then, Jeff?
I got sucked right in. I learned a whole lot. How long ago was that, guys?
12 weeks.
12 weeks. I didn't know what an ELG was. I didn't know what a Moodle was. I didn't know what WordPress was. I didn't have my own server space, and I consider brainstorming the best professional development opportunity I've had as a computer lab teacher here in Ann Arbor.
And he has really taken the ball and run with it, and has a number of very exciting projects going, and has really been the model of an ed tech teacher in my mind.
The very model of a modern major ed tech teacher.
Well, thank you. What I'm a model of is being able to take advantage of some generous support and guidance and brainstorming. I mean, that's what it really is. It's listening to people talk about the blogs, the learning theory, the connectance, social connectivity, and really having a chance to babble and not babble. Yeah, babble, but play with it and have fun just trying these different things, because they have incredible power in our learning environments, and I'm really excited because through my contact and brainstorming, I've been able to get some colleagues, and I feel like I'm able to make a systemic change, or at least have some impact on my school district here in Ann Arbor, where there are 1,700 teachers, and the word needs to get out that these tools are here and they're coming fast, and we need to think about how we're going to use them.
Yeah, and the webheads certainly don't need, they know about the virtues of collaboration. And the webheads met World Bridges on EdTech Talk number one. Dave and I said, hey, let's do this show on educational technology. And we got on and we talked for an hour. And no one tuned in. No one Skyped in. And we said, well, okay, that was a decent talk. And we turned the stream off. 2 minutes later, Butena Skyped in. and said, "Oh, I'm a webhead, and I heard you were doing some kind of webcasting, and oh, and I posted the wrong GMT." And so I said, "Oh, wait a minute, we'll go right back on the air." And we had a great session with Butena and Daphne, and I think maybe Rita, and webheads and world bridges. It was really just love at first sight. I think the spirit of collaboration and just sharing and developing as a community of practice has been great.
And I think that's the key to it. It is the idea of community of practice. If you're expecting to come to a live webcast and for everything to go neat and tidy, and I guess you can pay $200,000 or $300,000 to sort that out, make sure that it does work that way. We don't work like that here. You know, we go out there, we do our prep, and we do set up as much as we can. But we do want everyone to be involved, and if you want everybody to be involved, it's not going to be perfect all the time. And to be honest, I prefer it that way. It's a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, it's very homegrown webcasting. We should also say, you know, all this stuff is done live, but all of the recordings are posted on edtechtalk.com and worldbridges.com and made available for download via the internet or podcast. You can subscribe to our RSS feed. So we get a lot more people listening after the fact, but it is exciting to be part of the live conversation. Moving along, Dave, I see a bunch of other things to mention. The one I'm most excited about hearing is you've had a very exciting week. You've been converted.
I have to admit that after 15 years of saying, 20 years of saying I would never touch a Mac, I'd never go close to one, those damn things, they don't let you do anything, la 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 la, I've been converted. 4 days ago, my system crashed for the 27 millionth time. Now, granted, that is neither the fault of Linux nor of Windows. I am very mean to my computer. I install things, I do all kinds of things, and to be honest, I try to work too fast, and that gets me into an awful lot of trouble. 2 years ago, I switched to a Linux desktop to try to learn how to use Linux, and I've been dual booting with Windows, so I go back and forth and back and forth. And I tried to install Windows over Linux, yada yada, long story short, I spent 6 hours staring at my computer installing things and nothing happened. Next day I got up, I said, to hell with this, I'm going to buy a friggin' Mac. Everybody tells me they work, and right now, just for my own sanity, I need a computer that works when I turn it on. And I bought one on Thursday. I bought an iBook, a G4 with a gig of RAM and a 60 gig hard drive. My God, this thing works nice. I did have one crash. In the first 25 minutes, it crashed on me, and I was feeling pretty bitter. But since then, I've been webcasting and chatting and reading my email and watching a movie at the same time, and nothing. Just picks it up and sings along with it. It's nice and fast. In 4 days, I've had one problem in terms of finding software, and it's when I tried to install OpenOffice, and 15 minutes later, I found another solution for it. So right now, there is nothing that I can't do with this computer. And I haven't paid a dime for any of the software that I'm using. So all the things I thought about having to pay all this money for Mac and all the rest of this stuff, nothing. I have not paid a dime, and I haven't stolen any software either. It's all free software. It's all available. I'm set up. I'm ready to go. And I'm pretty friggin' pleased.
Harold wants to know more about NeoOffice.
Ah, NeoOffice. NeoOffice, we were talking about this in the pre-show. NeoOffice is a combination of Camino and Java platform for OpenOffice. Because OpenOffice needs a Windows layer on top of it on your Mac to be able to play it. But they've made NeoOffice, which is a trimmed-down version of OpenOffice, which allows you to do the basics. It doesn't have the full functionality. But the basics, it's based on the 1.1.3 version of OpenOffice. And thus far, very pleased with it. Works fine. And once I figure out what X11 is, X11 is the Windows emulator that you put on your Mac, then apparently I'm going to be able to put OpenOffice down, and then I'll have everything I need.
I'm wondering, John Hibbs is mentioning in the chat room that he's had trouble accessing Illuminate and possibly Elato from a Mac. Jeff, have you had any problems getting in on your Mac?
I had a few problems until I sorted it out. Illuminate started working well. I did find that in my Elato over the weekend, I didn't get the visuals, the slides, that came through. They were black. But I could hear the audio and everything okay. Illuminate did work fine for me, but I do hop around browsers a bit between Safari, Flock, and Opera. And, I don't problem solve. I just switch. And so far I've had pretty good luck.
So there's no secret to using the Talking Communities on a Mac. It's just try a bunch of different browsers?
That's my recommendation, and it worked for me. But like I said, I still had a problem. I was only in one Elato at the right time, and I did not get – what I ended up doing is taking the URL that was shown in Elato and putting it in my browser and manually updating the slide every time in a different browser window, which is certainly cumbersome.
All right, cruising along, I want to get people in here soon and start talking about the weekend that was, the online convergence. But there's a couple things that I think we might want to mention from the show notes, Dave. Of course, Elg and Superglue. I don't know what Superglue is.
Superglue is another aggregator. It's an online aggregator that that I'm personally in love with. What it does, you can take anybody's Delicious account, their Flickr account, their whatever account, just go to Superglue, get yourself an account, and it says, what do you want to put in? So if you put in delicious.com/WRICH, which is Will Richardson's account name, you'll get all of his Delicious tags onto Superglue, and they'll just pop up, and they'll be listed. If you want to add your Flickr account, you want to add whatever, it's a way of actually making the feed book happen. For those of you who know what a feed book is, you know I've been ranting about this for 5 months now. For those of you who don't, simply speaking, it's the idea of using a textbook except using feeds as the basis textbook for a classroom. This would be more, I guess, directed towards university classrooms, but I can definitely see using it in high schools as well. And 5 years from now, maybe even in the junior high and in the elementary schools. But I think that right now Superglue is the best solution for that. It's just so easy to use. Like, you get there and there are no options. BlogLines can do it, but BlogLines has a lot of text, it has a lot of menus, it has a lot of buttons to click, and for tech-oriented people, it's perfectly simple to use. But for people who just want the internet to work, who don't want to spend the time, and frankly don't have the time to do that, Superglue is a fantastic option. It's really cool. It is at superglue.com, Superglue.
And it just looks so cool. I love their bright interface. It really is a change of pace from that way of those kinds of tools.
And a show of EdTech Talk would be remiss if we didn't mention Elg at least once. Dave, can you tell anyone who doesn't know about it already, what is Elg?
Elg is an e-portfolio software. Actually, they don't like calling it that anymore. They now want to call it a learning landscape. But it's a collection of several tools in one sort of easy-to-use system. It has friend-of-a-friend functionality. It has a multi-user blog. It allows for group automated group making, so any member can sort of start a group and go. The idea is you can get, say, 100 people in there from different places who don't know each other, and simply by filling out your personal description and by blogging, you can start meeting people with similar interests. And it's a fantastic piece of software for several reasons. It's easy to use. It's easy to install. It's super light on the server. And within, probably 15 minutes, you can get up and running with it. And I think that we've got several projects that we're looking to start with Elg. We have two of them set up. One of them that we're looking to get 8th graders from, around the world in it and try to do that, try to get 100 kids or so in there and see what happens as they start building their own community. And we're also looking at doing a teacher training program, and actually not restricted to teachers in any way, but we happen to be mostly teachers listening, and do a training program at thenewmediaproject.com and get people in and sort of show them how to not only use these tools, because, really, the tools are only good insofar as what they allow you to do. It's what they do that's important. And what I'd really like is to get in there and sort of talk about how to apply this in your curriculum and how to get the kids to connect and sort of explain to people what we think is the value of these tools. I think for a lot of people, they still don't see what exactly is the purpose of getting kids to do this. What are the learning objects? What are those things that, that come from a more traditional educational background and sort of discuss those things and maybe come up with a strategic plan for people to approach their administrations and their fellow teachers with that would include the language from that old style education to sort of not only justify but make it real. You know?
Yeah, and ELGA is just a relatively simple way. If you're thinking about starting some kind of class blog project or digital portfolios even, it's just, it works great. It has a wonderful system of social networking and including tags and everything, and we highly recommend it. We did an interview with the guys who have developed it, Ben and Dave, in EdTech Talk number 8, I think.
Yes, EdTech Talk number 8. It's actually a good... We got to set up those things so they're easier to access. Sort of the greatest hits where we've had the sort of coolest people on or where the shows have been particularly working.
And there's been a lot of talk in the chat room about, oh, it's hard to access the audio stream or it's hard to find this or that. We've been talking quite a bit about how best to design the site so that all of these links are easy to find. Unfortunately, doing this kind of streaming, there's no simple one-click here and listen solution. It depends which operating system you're using. It depends which media players you have installed, what's your default player for a PLS file. So,
And everybody has it different on three different platforms, and we're doing our best to sort it out as quickly as we can. So the more feedback you send us, the better on that. We do listen to it all, and we're constantly trying to streamline this system.
Yeah, we want to keep it simple, but I think ultimately we're going to have to say, okay, if you've got this set up, click here. If you've got that set up, click here. But again, feedback is very welcome. All right, anything we want to mention before we get into the online convergence discussion?
I would just like to once again pitch what we're going to do next week. Next week we're going to be talking about, we're going to go back to basics. We're going to talk about each one of these tools piece by piece and sort of give people a rundown on what Moodle is, what ELG is, how to use OpenOffice, what Superglue is, Skype, WordPress, what blogging is. We're going to go right back to the beginning and start our introduction episode. I implore any of you who are interested to send in your questions in the forums, email them to edtech@edtechtalk.com, or even better, come to the chat room next Sunday and Skype in and ask your questions, because we are looking at making this the best introductory show possible. And for Jeff and I, we can guess at what the questions are that people are going to have, but it's far more authentic and far more useful if you guys actually come and ask them yourselves. So come on out, and we're going to get that done next week, next Sunday.
All right. Well, webheads, we'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to Skype in to World Bridges. If for any reason you Skype into World Bridges and you get a voicemail message, let us know in the chat room that you'd like to communicate with us, and I'll Skype out to you. You can also participate in the teleconference. The phone number and access code are on the front page of World Bridges, and from there you just have to unmute yourself by pressing 6.
And while we're waiting for that, why don't I ask a couple of questions of two people who are at the WIA conference this weekend. How'd the Dublin brunch go?
I think it went pretty well. I suspect John Hibbs would be the person to really answer that question, and I'd kind of be interested in hearing us answer that question. It was a very interesting discussion. I was primarily concerned with audio quality being, for those who don't know, the Dublin brunch was basically this kind of conference, combination webcast and teleconference that was being picked up by Near FM, a community radio station in Ireland, and played on the radio. And so the pressure to have quality audio was much greater than normal. I think we did okay. Had a couple of little extra static, but I'm hoping it was okay.
This is Jeff in Ann Arbor. I thought your sound quality was very acceptable, Jeff. And I have to be honest, it was the first time that I had really pondered community radio, and we explore the technologies that are cutting edge with the web and all, but the idea of phones and radios are really pretty bulletproof, and I enjoyed the discussion and working it out in my own mind, the blending of podcasting and radio casting and that as a new community-empowered medium.
It is. John Hibbs, I first encountered John Hibbs a few weeks ago when we started planning for the convergence, and he mentioned the Dublin brunch. And he, if he Skypes in, you'll soon find out he is a missionary on this cause of using access to community radio for his focus, I think, is on large events or very important events, as he calls them. I think just in terms of regular programming as well. I mean, I think there are radio stations and radio listeners who would be interested in tuning in to this kind of live broadcast, webcast. And there, and cell phones, there's a new, or not that new, but they're really coming along with streaming live content to cell phones. So I think there will be quite a convergence of it. I believe I hear John Hibbs.
Yeah, thanks. I've been listening on the, both on the stream and on the net. This is John Hibbs.
First question, how did the Dublin brunch go?
Yeah, I heard that question. Well, I think for me, of course, I'm extremely passionate about radio. And while I started that passion because of the reach of radio, for instance, today in a small radio station in Dublin, they claim to have over 20,000 listeners on their Sunday morning brunch. And I'm sure that number eclipses by thousands, even the numbers that are that came into the Webheads Convergence Conference. So for just that particular 1 hour, we got a lot of people that heard for the first time about this convergence. But I'm also passionate about the pedagogic value of bringing the microphone into the classroom for a lot of different reasons, and all of you have been articulating about that with podcasting and the value of writing by way of blogging and speaking by way of a microphone. I find that the motivation to be able to speak well into a microphone, even for a 10-year-old child who knows that her grandmother may be listening on the radio, a small community radio station, is a tremendous motivation to speak well and to organize your thoughts well. So I'm an advocate of radio, conventional radio, for both for purposes of its reach and for purposes of its pedagogic value. As far as the telephone and Skyping, I thought the Skyping worked in very well. I do believe that there's a tendency among those who are easy with the new tools to only want to discard everything else, and somehow they seem to forget or discard the idea that the telephone is easily the world's most friendly, ubiquitous instrument. Everyone knows how to work it, and with very small amounts of money, by way of prepaid calling cards or your own service, considering that you only talk for 20 or 30 minutes, it's a high-value investment to pay for the long-distance call to come into a room which is bridged both ways and makes for very easy interactivity. So I'm a big promoter of friendly, ubiquitous channels of communication, and the telephone is one of them, and community radio is another one. So I think it went well. We had, for those who weren't there, we had speakers from Spain and from England and from New Delhi and from Washington, D.C., and, of course, the Irish themselves. A little disappointed. They usually have Irish call-ins, taxicab drivers, people listening at home, the C-SPAN on the air, and it's always interesting to get their questions from the Irish audience who are just calling in on their cell phones. But I think that's what I have to say about the Dublin brunch.
Well, I enjoyed being there. John, what was your take on the online convergence this past weekend?
My take, I mean, beginning to end, I thought it was the best instructional piece for all of the different platforms and tools and technology resources that are available that I've ever seen. I think that's the good news. I think the bad news is that it made navigation and centrality, for lack of a better word, problematic. I mean, I feel very strongly, for instance, about the use of text chat rooms And I think that pointing all the viewers for particular sessions into a text chat room, into a single text chat room, which was common, would be very helpful, and especially for navigation.
I think you're right, John, but I think this is Dave in Charlottetown. I think that's the problem when people aren't being paid to do that. If you could pay someone to sit in front of a chat room and organize it for 48 hours, I think that you could do that. But in this kind of free conference, I think it's really tough to have that kind of centralization.
Well, that's exactly correct that it is. And one of the reasons that I argue for a larger audience is I think that for very important conferences like this one, and I believe this WebHeads Conversion Conference is what I call a very important conference, that in order to make them run well, they have to have paid people that to organize that. Or you have to reach into the community itself and really say, and I know Vance worked very hard to say, please come in and moderate this, or please help out here. We did that with Global Learn Day for years and years and years, and we basically exhausted the same people who would carry the loads every single year. And it became very exhaustive for them to do it, and the same would be true here. I still think you can point them and direct them toward one single chat room that would be open all the time. That doesn't have to be a moderated chat room.
I just want to welcome Nellie to our Skype conference, who made a beautiful, graceful first entry into a webcast. So what did you think of the online convergence?
Well, listen, a friend of mine just got me in there because I was busy with Hot Conference. I teach I don't know if you've heard of Hot Conference, but it's like a talking community. And she got me on Skype, and she said, Nellie, are you busy? If not, join us. So I went into the chat room, and I got kind of confused. And then I saw somebody say, why don't you Skype? And I just did, and here I am. I think you're doing something really, really wonderful. It's great. I missed this morning's session with Ruth Vilmi, and I'm really sorry about that. But this is really great. The only thing I'd like to know is how I can, record voices, some of these webcasts.
You should be able to do that using an audio program like Audacity.
Could you write that in? Sorry.
Sure. Dave, can you type that in? If you set your recording controls to what you hear or stereo mix or what is it in a Mac?
I don't have a Mac.
Okay, never mind then.
I've got a PC.
if you just set it to one of those things, it should record whatever sound is happening on your computer. So it will automatically capture the webcast or a talking community. It will also capture any other audio that's happening, so you need to be
careful.
And
these shows are actually recorded anyway, so you can actually listen to them later. They're served up as a podcast in various different ways.
Okay. Is that Jeff? Is that you, Jeff?
This is me, Dave, in Charlottetown.
Oh, okay. But the sound is exceptionally good. I mean, I've never heard such, clear voice to this day. I mean, this is incredible.
I believe Elizabeth is with us. Are you there, Elizabeth? The question for anyone who couldn't hear that was, how does the voice conference connect to the webcast? What I am doing is using a program called SAM Broadcaster, which is actually DJ software, and it costs $200. But you can do this with a free streaming software called Oddcast or $60 program called Simplecast that allows you to capture the audio from your computer and stream it out using a Shoutcast server and webcast it. There's information on this. If you go to worldbridges.com and click guides, there's a webcast production guide, which is still very much in progress, that will give you links to all of that and more information about how we do this. There's also a screen capture video of this thing in progress.
Okay, is that a little better, or is that too low?
A little better.
Interface with.
Oh, much better. So tell us about the online convergence, Elizabeth. What do you think?
I think this is just a fabulous conference. I've been having a wonderful time learning new things, and I was thinking about what John Hibbs said earlier, and I think one of the problems with having the Global Learn Day is it comes every year. Maybe a worldwide conference like this should be biannually rather than annually. That way people have time to think about what new things have come up, and sometimes a year isn't enough to find that. Yeah, I was just thinking if this were a biannual event so that every 2 years you had a Global Learn Day, that might make it easier to collect the people and the volunteers and everybody that you need to put on a production like this. I mean, Vance really did the online convergence almost alone, but no, he had all the webheads helping him, of course. But
Elizabeth,
it was hard to do.
If I could chime in on that. Go ahead, Bill. Tell me when I can
go ahead. I'm done.
My feeling about very important events is that I thought about the biannual, I thought about semiannual, but my feeling is that there are at least four groups, and perhaps six, but certainly there's a couple other webheads that I know that are out there that I believe should incorporate into their individual strategy the idea of them holding the kind of conference that webheads just did on an annual basis. And I think that if the organizers, a small number of organizers, could guarantee to, but do all of the work on a paid basis for four conferences a year, perhaps six conferences a year, that were truly of global nature, and Webheads would be one of them, and Global Learn Day would be another one, and Youth Day may be another one, and Social Networking may be another one, just to name a few, that would support, because it doesn't take very many people to do these if they do it all the time. And what I fear about for Vance and for Jeff and for everybody else is that you get worn out doing these things and nobody can get paid for it. So my feeling is there's a small number of people that know how to do this, and there's a large number of people who have very important groups, and they need, and the world needs, to hear from them in a large, in a way that maybe 1 million or 2 million or 3 million listeners can get a little taste of it. And they would use that, their conference, not so much for pins and needles and the digits and this, but more to advertise what they were doing and how to come to them and how to participate.
So this is Dave in Charlottetown. We were talking about this on Friday night. I really think that the way we need to go is not bigger conferences, but smaller ones. I agree with you completely. The reason to have a massive conference is because it takes, in a year ahead of time, is because you got to get plane tickets, you got to take time off, you got to get all this sorted out. To do this kind of conference, we don't need to do any of that. All we need to do is have a way to communicate the information that the conference is happening at a certain time. And even if you can't be there, everything is going to be podcasted, so you can listen to it whenever you want to. And I think that an organization that allows people the access, that gives them the direction, and like you were saying earlier, that is that centralized chat room, not for one conference, but for 20, that you can go in and say, okay, there's a conference going on in 4 weeks about blogging and security for students, and then if that's the thing that particularly interests you, you can pick and choose, right? And I think that there's a huge opportunity here, but what we do have to do is leave behind our idea of conference from 5 years ago and take the tech, like follow the technology to the powers that you were talking about earlier, John, to the fact that it is easy to use, the fact that we can telephone in, the fact that, and if, you know, those groups do take group fees, and that pays for a server somewhere, and that pays for somebody to do the work. I think that's a great idea, and certainly I'm sure WorldBridges would accept the money. But I think you're on the right track. I think that's the way to go.
Well, we have found a very large resistance, and it annoys me terrifically. I'll give you an example of resistance to abandoning or having less physical conferences. The largest distance learning conference organized group in the world is called DEOS, organized by Penn State, and once a year the luminaries, about 2,000 of them, journey to Wisconsin every year for their physical meetings and are only just now getting around to webcasting it. and yet they're always talking about their budgetary problems and how much it costs. Yeah. But they love to go off to Wisconsin in the summertime and eat apples and cheese. So, I mean,
John?
I think that, yes, I mean, so it's a very hard proposition to get present conferences to do it. But some of the innovators, the practitioners, the webheads that are out there, these people have a really incredibly important message, and now the vehicles are all there, except for funding it and reaching a very large audience on occasion, not all the time. I love webheads and Tapped In because all year long it's a great group, and they're holding little conferences and big ones and all this. But once a year, webheads deserves to have 500,000 people learn about the value of English language instruction around the world.
All right, I want to let Elizabeth jump in, and before that, I want to let people know that we are going to wrap up the official show in just a couple of minutes, because I know webheads have some other sessions to attend after this. But we will keep going with a post-show for anyone who would like to stay tuned. Elizabeth, the last word is yours.
Oh, thank you. I think two things. One is that if it's paid, then it starts to be less fun. And one of the things we like to do is have fun as webheads. The second thing is to follow where Dave was leading. Why does it have to be at one particular time? Well, we really enjoyed those voice chats, and we had an interface in Illuminate and Elato where we could do voice chats easily, and that was great. You have to have that facility, and you have to have a place where people can go easily. The other thing is, why is it only for that weekend? All of us tried to open forums in a Moodle to get some conversation going outside of the immediate, you could almost call it, it was asynchronous, but to get the asynchronous part of it, that didn't seem to work very well because we were all so frantic getting prepared for our presentations. So one aspect of it is how to create year-round conferencing, and that's really what Webheads is about, is a year-round conference. And yes, we want to bring more people in, but you have to bring them in at all different levels, so that's going to be different. $60 is too much money for most people in developing countries, so that's not going to work. Thanks a lot for letting me have a say.
Well, thank you very much, and... Well, I don't know about how often very important events will be held, but I know EdTech Talk will be back on the air next week, same time, and our EdTech Brainstorm will be on Saturday, Sunday-ish. Check the Global Times for the exact show time, and you can decide whether that's very important or not. But thank you very much to everyone who has participated and tuned in. We're delighted to make the acquaintance of our new listeners and glad to see our old listeners. And we will look forward to continuing the conversation next time.